Thalen City. Adolin joined him, then finally Shallan and the three Spren. Shallan sighed and settled to the ground, coughing softly for the effort of the climb. Amid the sea of lights were two towering Spren, much like the ones they'd seen in Kolinar. One sparkled a multitude of colors while the other shimmered an oily black. Both stood tall, holding spears as long as a building. The sentries of the Oathgate, and they didn't look corrupted. Beneath them, the device itself manifested as a large stone platform with a wide, sweeping white bridge running over the beads and to the shore. That bridge was guarded by an entire army of enemy Spren, hundreds, perhaps thousands strong.
Heroes of presents The Storm Pod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 3, Oathbringer.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 111, 112, 113. This is going to be an entirely live read episode. Jack is going to find out some pretty cool information in this episode. So if you haven't read the chapters, or if you've picked the wrong episode, please go back and do the things you need to do to be caught up. We don't want you to be spoiled for this episode. Please enjoy it. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and he's about to have a live read that will blow his effing mind. It's Jack. What's up, dude?
How are you this morning?
I am very excited, man. I am very excited. I'm actually really excited with how much we've been able to record lately. You know, we got kind of busy in our lives, and we had these 3 weeks here where we couldn't. And then we were able to rally, and we recorded 4 episodes in 2 weeks. And, like, that makes me really feel really good about where we're heading. So, we got 9 episodes left, I think, after this one for the book.
I like it when we have the momentum in the recording, because it really keeps me engaged. Regular in the book.
Yeah.
So I have to admit, when we had a hiatus of a few weeks, it's like, okay.
Or when you guys went to Spain and the recovery time and all that stuff, it was 6 weeks, right? So it must be hard for you to remember. Oh yeah. This is one of the things we talked about before we were recording, that I had to remind you that, that at the beginning of the book, we had these excerpts from the books, the in-world book of Oathbringer.
Of Oathbringer, which I completely forgot about, because I was saying to Sean, okay, what's with this book? It's called Oathbringer. Where's the oats and the Hubbringers?
Yeah, right.
Like, it's nowhere.
Yeah.
The sword is stuck in a planter, or no, sorry, it's with Elay and Amram.
One of the two of them have it, yeah.
But you're right. I completely forgot that there were excerpts from Oathbringer at the start.
Right.
And I was saying to Sean just before we recorded, like, what happened to that? Like, where is that? Why is Oathbringer not a thing? And I actually started to think about this a few nights ago.
Right. We talked about this last episode, but for everyone listening live here, yeah, give them a kind of a synopsis of what your fears are going into this episode.
So I started to think, why is there no presence of Oathbringer? And I thought, wow, it's because it's going to come up at the end somehow. Oathbringer is going to be a thing. And I mean the sword. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, what's been happening lately in the book? Well, the big thing, at least for me, I mean, not just that the heroes are in Shadesmar and in trouble and on the run, and trying to get back to Thalen City to meet up with Dalinar, but that Adolin confesses to Shallan what he did.
Right.
To Sadeas.
Right.
And Sean let me know yesterday that, or a few days ago, that the title of a section of part five or the first chapter of part five or something. It's called the I think it's called The Cost.
Yeah, that's my mistake.
Jack was saying Adolin's going to pay
the price. And I'm like, well, it's funny that you say that because I think there was a chapter earlier in the book called The Cost. And then I like looked it up in like real time and I was like, oh, it's we haven't read it yet. And then you're like, what? It's coming up.
So what I was thinking is that Adolin is going to pay the price. That could be our denouement. That's where we're headed.
Yeah.
And so if we're headed there, what does that look like? And I was saying to Sean that my biggest fear is that out of a sense of honor amongst the High Princes, if Ile and Amram know about what Adolin has done, and that brings up another sort of topic of conversation, because if they do know, how do they know?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a spy amongst the heroes?
Right. And then I started joking around going like, maybe it's Shallan or maybe it's Kaladin. And then you were like, okay.
Don't make fun of me here. I'm not going there. I'm just saying that the thing that I thought of the most or that was disturbing me the most was that Dalinar would have to kill his son.
Mm-hmm.
That Dalinar, out of a respect or duty or honor amongst High Princes, would be forced to execute Adolin,
mm-hmm.
and may just have to do it because it is the right thing to do in that sphere, if you will.
Right.
And I thought, wow, that's awful. And then I thought, how much worse could it be that he has to do it with his old sword? Right. Oathbringer was Dalinar's, right?
Yeah, it's tricky because you're the way that you're thinking of it kind of makes sense, right? A lot of the stuff that you're saying leads you in that direction. I obviously can't tell you whether you're right or not. But one of the things I think that spurred this on to begin with was you're like, why is Oathbringer not more of a thing in this book? Why call it Oathbringer? Yeah. And then I reminded you that, like the other books, it's actually a book within the beginning. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, and then I thought, well, if Dalinar, then my thoughts were like, well, what if Dalinar is put in that position? And then he says, well, you know what? What better time to bring back the Blackthorn?
Right.
And he reclaims Oathbringer and says, if you dare touch my son, I am now your enemy. And maybe even does a strike against Amram or ELA or anyone else that gets in his way between him and his son.
I like that the version of this that I like the most is that you're like, I can't remember what the exact words you said, but you implied that he would do to the entire princedoms what he did to Rathalas. He would unleash the Blackthorn and that the Blackthorn would come back.
In defense of his son.
The thing that he had been struggling to push away the entire time, he would embrace in order to, I like that theory.
In order to protect his son. Yeah. Or his sons. Like, you know, so, and that's complicated so there was a thought after that, Sean, and I was talking to Buzzkill this morning about it, and I couldn't remember it. I had another thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what it was. I kind of lost track of it at that point because I was spiraling and then I was freaking out and then I was reaching out to Sean for comfort and Sean was sort of trying to comfort me, but not really.
Yeah.
I forget what you texted something.
Well, last episode, I read out the texts aloud. So if you're listening to this now, that means you've already listened to the last episode. So you already know what Jack's talking about. So.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well,
anyways, walking into this. I'm not ready. I'll say this. I was saying to Sean, if Adolin is in trouble here and serious trouble, and does pay the price, I don't know if this series really should go there. It just seems a little too,
you equated it to like, it's more of like a J.R.R. Martin
Game of Thrones. Movie. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not feeling terribly great.
I'm excited for you to find out what this chapter's about.
Okay.
So.
Good. Let's dive in.
All right.
So chapter 111. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of cool. And it's called Isla Steel?
That's close enough.
Or how do you say it? How do you say it?
It's Ella Steele or Ella Steele. I've heard different things. I can't remember exactly what the audiobooks say, but.
Okay. Okay. E-I-L-A. Okay. Ella or Isla. And Steely?
Or Steele.
Okay. It begins with an excerpt from Hesse again. It will not take a careful reader to ascertain that I have listed only 8 of the unmade here. Lore is confident there were 9. An unholy number, asymmetrical, and often associated with the enemy. I have listed only 8 of the unmade here, and there were 9.
Yeah, so there's another one that she hasn't talked about yet.
Right. Well, maybe that's what we're getting here. So Dalinar, so let's just jump in.
Yeah,
Dalinar stepped out of the Oathgate control building into Thalen City. Oh, wow. And was met by the man he most wanted to punch in all of Roshar. Meridus Amaram. Stood straight in his House Sadeus uniform. Oh, man. See, I'm already up. I'm nervous because we're getting Amaram in the first sentence and the word Sadeus in the first sentence. Dude.
Clearly, it's making this pod, like, perfect.
Oh, God. There's no way, bro. Okay, I'm not ready for this. If any of my silly stuff comes true, I'm going to be very, very vexed. Okay, Amram stood straight in his House Sadeus uniform. Clean-shaven, narrow-faced, square-jawed, tall and orderly, with shining buttons and a sharp posture. He was the very image of a perfect Alethi officer. "Report," Dalinar said, hopefully keeping the dislike out of his voice. Amaram, Sadeus, fell into step with Dalinar, and they walked to the edge of the Oathgate platform overlooking the city. Dalinar's guards gave them space to converse. "Our crews have done wonders for this city, Bright Lord," Amaram said. "We focused our initial attentions on the debris outside the walls. I worried that would give an invading force too much cover, not to mention rubble to construct a ramp up to the wall. Indeed, the plain before the city walls, which had once housed the markets and warehouses of the docks, was completely clear. A killing field, interrupted by the occasional outline of a broken foundation. The Almighty only knew how the Thalen military had allowed a collection of buildings outside the walls in the first place. That would have been a nightmare to defend. We shored up positions where the wall was weakened," Amaram continued, gesturing. "It's not high by Kolinar standards, but is an impressive fortification nonetheless. We cleared out the buildings right inside to provide staging and resource dumps, and my army is camped there. We then helped with general reconstruction. The city looks far better," Dalinar said. "Your men did well." "Then maybe our penance can be over," Amaram said. Oh.
This is kind of part of the punishment for what they did at the tower and stuff, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. He said it straight, though anger spren, a pool of boiling blood, spread from beneath his right foot. Oh. So does that mean
he's angry about it? Yeah. He's trying to hold it together, but the anger spren are giving him up again, right?
Right. "Your work here was important, soldier. You didn't only rebuild a city, you built the trust of the Thalen people." "Of course," Amaram added more softly. "And I do see the tactical importance of knowing the enemy fortifications." "You fool. The Thalens are not our enemies."
So even Amaram thinks that he was sent over here to learn the fortifications of the Thalen so that they can take him over.
So they could take advantage of it. Yeah.
Yep.
Duplicitous. I misspoke, Amaram said. Yes, I cannot ignore that the colon... You know what, though? He's a person of war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would invariably look at these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's...
It's why it was really hard for all the people of the Coalition to even think that Dalinar wasn't going to take them over.
Right.
Because that's what the Alethi do.
That's what the Alethi do.
Right.
Yeah. I misspoke. Yet I cannot ignore that the Colan troops have been deployed to the border between our kingdom and Yaakoved. Your men get to liberate our homeland while mine spend their days digging in rocks. You do realize the effect this has on their morale, particularly since many of them still assume you assassinated their High Prince? Sorry, right. I keep looking up at Sean. Like,
yeah.
I hope that their current leader has worked to disabuse them of such false notions. Amram finally turned to look Dalinar in the eyes. Those anger spren were still there, though his tone was crisp and militaristic. Brightlord, I know you for a realist. I've modeled my career after yours. Frankly, even if you did kill him, which I know you must deny, I would respect you for it.
Hmm.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That is a surprise
mm-hmm.
to me. Toril was a liability to this nation. Dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's a departure from what I thought. Let me prove to you that I am not the same. Storms, Dalinar, I'm your best frontline general, and you know it. Toril spent years wasting me because my reputation intimidated him. Don't make the same mistake. Use me. Let me fight for Alethkar, not kiss the feet of Thalen merchants. Enough, Dalinar snaps. Follow your orders. That is how you'll prove yourself to me.
So...
Amaram... Sorry, go ahead.
I think it's kind of rich of Amaram to say, Sadeas was intimidated by me and my reputation. That's why he kept me on the back burner all these years.
Right.
It's easy to make that statement now that Sadeas is gone, right? Sadeas isn't here to be like, I'm not intimidated by you, you stupid fuck. Like you know what I mean? He's not around to defend himself, so it's easy for him to make that kind of statement.
Right. But I'm enjoying this. It's given me a little bit of levity.
Mm-hmm.
Or
okay.
A change of... If he's speaking the truth, I mean, you know... I think he is. It's interesting. Use me. Kind of like that. Amaram stepped back. Then after a deliberate pause, he saluted and he spun on his heel and marched down into the city. That man, Dalinar thought. Dalinar had intended to tell him that this island would host the front lines in the war, but the conversation had slipped from him. Well, Amaram might quickly get the fighting he wanted, a fact he would discover soon enough at the planning meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Boots on stone sounded behind him as a group of men in blue uniforms joined him at the rim of the plateau. Permission to stab him a little, sir, said Teft, the Bridgeman leader. Oh, this is cool. Teft.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
How do you stab someone a little, soldier? I could do it, Lin says. I've only started training with a spear. You could claim it was an accident. No, no, Lopin says. You want to stab him a little? Let my cousin Huyo do it, sir. He's the expert on little things. A short joke, Huyo said in his broken Alethi. Be glad not short temper. I'm just trying to involve you, Huyo. I know that most people overlook you. It's very easy to do, you see. Attention, Dalinar snaps. Though he found himself smiling.
I love that.
He scrambled.
That's a little highlight for me is the...
That he smiles?
He's smiling. Yeah, because the men are being men, right? They're being they're being their typical Bridge Four.
They scrambled into ranks and Kaladin had trained them well. You've got... Dalinar checked the clock on his arm. 37 minutes until the meeting, men. And or women. Don't be late. They rushed off, chatting among themselves. Nivani, Yasna, Nivani, Yasna, and Renarin joined him soon after. And his wife gave him a sly smile as she noticed him checking his arm clock again. Storming Woman had gotten him to start arriving early for appointments just by strapping a device to his arm. That's funny. And I have a saying, there's no such thing as early. You're on time.
Yeah.
Yeah. As they gathered, Fenn's son climbed up onto the Oathgate platform and greeted Dalinar warmly. We have rooms for you above the temple where we'll be meeting. Well, we know you don't need them, since you can simply Oathgate home in an instant. We'll take them gladly, son. Dalinar says. And there's that that reference that we had yesterday in our pod that he says son.
Yeah.
And then Odium refers to Dalinar as son.
Mm-hmm.
And Dalinar commands these people that he calls son, or he's in charge of these people.
Yeah. So our I think our read that in that vision from last episode, that Odium uses this honorific towards Dalinar because Dalinar uses it towards other people, like almost trying to make him feel comfortable with the situation. Like, you talk to your men like that, and now I'm talking to you like that because you're mine, kind of thing.
You're mine. Yeah. Okay. We'll take them gladly, son, Dalinar says. I could use a little refreshment and time to think. The young man grinned. Dalinar never would get used to those spiked eyebrows. They climbed down from the platform, and a Thalen guard gave the all clear. A scribe sent word via Spanreed that the next transfer could take place. Dalinar paused to watch, and a minute later a flash occurred, surrounding the Oathgate with light. The Oathgates were under almost perpetual use these days. Malata was running the device today, as was becoming her duty more often. Remind me, Malata? That's
Taravangian's migrant. Right.
Uncle, Yasna said as he lingered. Merely curious about who's coming in next. I could pull the records for you, Yasna says. The new arrivals turned out to be a group of Thalen merchants in pompous clothing. They made their way down the larger ramp, surrounded by guards, and accompanied by several men carrying large chests. More bankers, Fenn's son said. The quiet economic collapse of Roshar continues. Collapse, Dalinar said, surprised. Well, bankers all across the continent have been pulling out of cities, Yasna said, pointing. You see that fortress of a building at the front of the ancient ward down below? That's the Thalen Gemstone Reserve. Local governments are going to have difficulty financing troops after this, Fenn's son said with a grimace. They'll have to write here with authorized span reads and get spheres shipped to them. It's going to be a nightmare of logistics for anyone not close to an Oathgate.
Mm-hmm.
Dalinar frowned. Well, couldn't you encourage the merchants to stay and support the cities that they're in? Sir, he replied. Sir, force the merchants to obey military authority. Forget I asked, Dalinar said, sharing a look with Nivani and Yasna. Nivani smiled fondly at what was probably a huge social misstep, but he suspected Yasna agreed with him. She'd probably have seized the banks and used them to fund the war. Renarin lingered, watching his merchants. "How big are the gemstones they've brought?" he asked. "Bright Lord," Fenn's son asked, glancing toward Dalinar, "for help. They'll be spheres, normal spheres." "Any larger gemstones?" Renarin asks. It's like Renarin expects them to be bigger for some reason.
Who knows Renarin's stuff, right?
"Any larger gemstones?" He turned toward them. "Anywhere in the city?" "Sure, lots of them," Fenn's son said. "Some really nice pieces. Like in every city. But why, Bright Lord?" "Because," Renarin said, and he didn't say anything more. What is that about?
What do you think it's about?
That's crazy. I don't know. Larger gemstones?
Yeah.
I don't have a guess.
Well, then we can't speak on it then. I can't say anything.
Well, you could remind me about some things I might be forgetting.
No, I can't.
Oh, okay.
I just don't want to, I don't want to lead. There's certain things I don't want to lead, right? And okay. This is one of those things.
Sure.
I will remind you that Renarin does have a knack of being able to see things in the future.
Yes.
So,
but we don't really know what he's seeing.
We don't really even know how he's seeing, right? We don't know if he's getting like impressions or any details, or we don't really know anything about Renarin. Right. Like successfully, Sanderson has still kept this character a secret from us.
I know, totally. A secret.
You know what I mean? And I fucking love
it. Pocket.
It's one of the reasons why at the very beginning of the pod in Way of Kings, I was like, my sweet boy Renarin, because we don't know anything about him. He's like Boba Fett in the 80s. We were like, we don't know anything about this guy, and we love him so much.
We love him so much for no
for
reason.
For no reason. That he's, though,
he's got a
Renarin's
cool
got reasons, but yeah.
Okay, well, we do get a POV here.
I also want to mention that the, what do they call it? The Thalen Gemstone Reserve sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It's like Fort Knox for gemstones.
I will say this though, if all of this wealth is coming into one place, isn't that also a risk?
Yeah. Maybe
because then it becomes concentrative wealth, right? In one place, that's not wise, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there'll be like a Die Hard with a Vengeance type scenario where they're going to be leading Kaladin on like a scavenger hunt with Sam Jackson.
A diehard.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we do get a change of scenery here or a different perspective coming up here. Dalinar splashed water onto his face from a basin in his rooms, which were in a villa above the temple of Telenalat, on the top tier of the city, the royal ward. He wiped his face with the towel and reached out to the Stormfather. "Feeling any better?" he asks. "I do not feel like men. I do not sicken like men. I am," the Stormfather rumbled. "I could have been destroyed, though, splintered into 1,000 pieces. I live only because the enemy fears exposing himself to a strike from cultivation." Remind me about cultivation.
Well, it's the other one. It's the third one.
Yeah.
Right?
And we don't know much about that either.
What's my notes here? Yeah, we don't.
So she lives still then, the third god. Yes. You've met her.
Stormfather saying Dalinar has met her.
So who's cultivation?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay. I have, Dalinar asks. You do not remember, but normally she hides. Cowardice. Perhaps wisdom, Dalinar says. The Night Watcher is not her. Yes, you've said. The Night Watcher is like you. Are there others, though? Spren like you or the Night Watcher? Spren that are shadows of gods. There is a third sibling, and they are not with us. Are they in hiding? No. Slumbering. Tell me more. No. But no. Leave them alone. You hurt them enough. Hmm. How has Dalinar hurt them?
You, as in like the royal you.
Yeah.
You people, you Radiance, you Alethi, you.
Oh, okay, sorry.
You know what I mean? Like, okay. Not Dalinar specifically.
Gotcha. Yeah, thanks. Fine, Dalinar says, setting aside the towel and leaning against the window. The air smelled of salt, reminding him of something not yet clear in his mind. One last hole in his memory. A trip by sea. And his visit to the valley.
We know that that's something that hasn't happened in the past, in the flashbacks. He made plans.
We haven't had the valley.
Yeah,
as far
he has
as I know,
plans
right?
to go to see the Night Watcher. But
right.
He hasn't actually gone. Like, we haven't seen him go there yet.
Right.
And that's still a gap in his memories. He's not remembering that yet. So it's kind of like going along with what we're reading.
We're catching up to his memories, too.
Yeah.
So we might get that POV.
We might,
We might get.
Yeah, we might.
He glanced at the dresser beside the wash basin, which held a book written in unfamiliar Thalen glyphs. And there was a little note beside it in Alethi glyphs that read, Pathway King. Fenn had left him a gift, a copy of The Way of Kings in Thalen. Well, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah, it's nice, eh?
I've done it, Dalinar said. I've united them, Stormfather. I've kept my oath and have brought men together instead of dividing them. Perhaps this can be penance in some small way for the pain I've caused. The Stormfather rumbled in reply. Did he care about what we felt? Dalinar asked. Honor the Almighty. Did he truly care about men's pain? This is some big stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
He did. Then I didn't understand why, but now I do. Odium lies when he claims to have sole ownership of passion. The Stormfather paused. I remember, at the end, Honor was more obsessed with oaths. There were times when the oath itself was more important than the meaning behind it. But he was not a passionless monster. He loved humankind, and he died defending you.
Mm-hmm.
Dalinar found Navani entertaining Teravangian in the common area of their villa. Your Majesty? Dalinar asks. You could call me Vargo if you wish, Teravangian said, pacing without looking at Dalinar. It is what they called me as a youth. It's interesting that Teravangian interrupts this conversation.
Well, Dalinar is like walking and talking to the Stormfather as he's walking.
Yeah.
And then he finds Navani entertaining Teravangian. So Teravangian doesn't come in and like...
No.
You know what I mean? Like it just happens
but
naturally.
But it's
still... But it is
I know.
Pretty
it's
awesome.
Just... It would have been nice for a little more expansion on Dalinar's thoughts about what the Stormfather just said. What's wrong? Dalinar asks. I'm just worried. My scholars. That's nothing. It's nothing, Dalinar, nothing. Silliness. I am well today. He stopped and squeezed his pale gray-green eyes. I'm inserting words here. His pale gray eyes shut. That's good, isn't it? Yes, but it is not a day to be heartless. So I worry. Heartless? What did he mean? Do you need to sit out of the meeting? Navani asks. Teravangian shook his head quickly. Come, let us go. I will be better. Better once we've started. I'm sure.
So the stuff here that the Stormfather says to Dalinar,
mm-hmm.
one of the things I want to point out is he says, mm-hmm. Odium lies when he says he has the sole ownership of passion.
Of passion.
When he told literally the last episode when we read yesterday, Odium says to him, I'm the only one who cares.
Right.
Like, no one cares about you. I'm the only one who cares about your pain, about your the way you feel. And Stormfather's saying,
right.
That is a lie. Don't let him convince you he's the Manipulate only one that you, cared yeah. like that. I also love how he says, Honor became more obsessed with oaths. There were times when he... when the oath itself was more important than the meaning behind it. That reminds me a little bit of Nail, the Herald of Justice, where the letter right. of the law became more important to him than what was behind the law, what the law was intended for. I really like
or
that.
Or the application.
Yeah, yeah. Or why there is a law to begin with, right? I really right. like that. It struck me yesterday when I was prepping for it that I was like, oh, it really reminds me of Nail a little bit, like mm-hmm. how even a god can kind of be short-sighted with what they attempt to do. They can kind of get lost. And so he became more obsessed with oaths than he did really with what was behind the oaths, right?
I wonder what he sort of is referring to there, the Stormfather, in terms mm-hmm. of the meaning. What it seems, with your example with Nail, what it would seem to me is the application of absolutism mm-hmm. to the oath.
Right.
So that no matter what, this must happen.
There's no wiggle room.
Right.
Even if it would be wrong to do something, but you can't break your oath to save this baby. You're letting the baby die because of the oath that
you've... This is it.
Yeah.
This is it.
Right.
So you have an oath, you have a law, you have a system of governance or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you also apply the absolutism to any of those things, mm-hmm. you are invariably going to run into trouble.
Right.
And I think that's what they're getting at.
It feels like it humanizes this god a little bit, you know? It like if
yeah,
people
yeah.
if people can become misguided like that,
mean,
and a god can too.
You mean
like,
honor?
Yeah, honor. Yeah, a god mm. can. It's really interesting. It really I like it. I don't know what it is about that little part, but I really like it. And I also just
really
enjoy the Stormfather telling Dalinar stuff. Like I just
yeah,
like that
I know,
too.
Right? I know.
Yeah,
it is really cool.
Yeah,
he died defending us. I like.
Yeah,
really cool. No idea where all this is going. Okay, another change.
Mm-hmm.
As Dalinar stepped into the temple's main chamber, he found that he was looking forward to the meeting. So maybe this is leading up to something here. They're meeting with all the stakeholders, right? That's what's mm-hmm. about to happen here.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's okay. So I'm back to getting a
this
little
is the coalition here. Meeting.
Mm-hmm. Because what's Tervangian said here, come, let us go. I will be better once we've started. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. he better meaning he's going to get what he wants.
Well, we know what his plan is, right? We mm-hmm. know his plan is to undermine Dalinar in the coalition. And we know that he's mm-hmm. going to release something. He's going to have his people release something all at the same time. There's a bunch of different things he has. It was one mm-hmm. of the last Tervangian chapters that we had. Mm-hmm. where they were going to strategically release information. So,
as Dalinar stepped into... Okay, I already read that one. What a strange revelation. He'd spent so much of his youth and middle years dreading politics and the endless rambling of meetings. Now he was excited. He could see the outlines of something grand in this room. The Azish delegation warmly greeted Queen Fenn, with Vizier Noura even giving Fenn a poem she'd written as thanks for the Thalen hospitality. Fenn's son made a point of sitting next to Renarin and chatting with him. Oh, that, you know what? That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Fenn's son has a kinship with Dalinar, like because of what Dalinar kind of has taught him, if you will,
yeah.
like in terms of, so he sees himself as like Dalinar's son. So I'm going to
yeah.
sit next to Dalinar's son.
I'm
going to
sit one of the sons.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't
yeah,
know.
It's
just
nice.
That's where my thought is. Emperor Yanagon looked comfortable on his throne, surrounded by allies and friends. Oh, man. And everything worked out perfectly, and we could just, that's the end of the story,
series.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? This is all good. Okay. Bridge Four joked with the guards of High Prince Aladar, while Lift, the Edge Dancer, perched on a windowsill nearby, listening with a cocked head. In addition to the five scout women in uniform, two women in Havas had joined Bridge Four. They carried notepads and pencils and had sewn Bridge Four patches to the upper sleeves of their dresses. Dude!
Yeah, they got some scribes.
I like this a lot.
Me too, it's awesome.
I like this. Yeah. The place where scribes commonly wore their platoon insignia. Alethi High Princes, Azish Viziers, Knights Radiant and Thalen Admirals, all in one room. Yikes. The Prime of Emul, it's like the concentrative wealth. Mm-hmm. You've also got all the concentrative stakeholders in one room. The Prime of Emul talking tactics with Aladar, who had been aiding the beleaguered country. General Kahl and Tashav speaking with the princes of Yazir, who was eyeing Halam Kahl, their eldest son, standing tall in his father's shard plate by the door. There was talk of a political union there. It would be the first in centuries between an Alethi and a Makabaki princedom. Unite them. A voice whispered the words in Dalinar's mind, echoing with the same resonant sound from months ago, when Dalinar had first started seeing the visions. "I'm doing so," Dalinar whispered back. "Unite them." "Stormfather, is that you? Why do you keep saying this to me?" "I said nothing." It was growing hard to distinguish between his own thoughts and what came from the Stormfather. Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh la la. Visions and memories struggled for space in Dalinar's brain. To clear his mind, he strode around the perimeter of the circular temple chamber, murals on the walls, ones he had healed with his abilities, depicted the herald Telenalat during several of his army, or sorry, of his many, many last stands against the Voidbringers. A large map had been mounted on one wall depicting the Tarat Sea and the surrounding areas, with markers noting the locations of their fleet. The room quieted as Dalinar stepped up and studied this. He glanced for a moment out the doors of the temple toward the bay. Already, a few of the faster ships of their fleet had arrived, flying the flags of both Karbranth and Azir. "Your Excellency," Dalinar said to Yanagon, "could you share news of your troops?" The Emperor gave leave to Nura to report. The main fleet was less than a day away. Their outriders, or scout ships, as she called them, had spotted no indications of the enemy advance. They'd worried that this window between storms would be when the enemies would move, but so far, there was no sign. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're inching along here.
Yep.
The admirals began to discuss how to best patrol the seas while keeping Thalen's city safe. Dalinar was pleased by the conversation, mostly because the admirals seemed to think that the real danger to Thalen City had passed. A Vedan high prince had managed to get a foot scout close enough to Murat to count the ships at the docks. Well over 100 vessels were waiting in the various coves and ports along the coast. For whatever reason, they weren't ready to launch yet, which was a blessing. The meeting progressed, with Fenn, belatedly, welcoming everyone. Dalinar realized he should have let her take charge from the start. She described the defenses in Thalen City and raised concerns from her guildmasters about Amaram's troops. Apparently, they'd been carousing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, we know how they were in their own camps back at the Shattered Plains.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Right, so.
Amaram stiffened at that. For all his faults, he liked to run a tight army.
And it's funny because Amaram is like that. We know he does run a tight army, but this hasn't been his army for very long. So his authority hasn't probably permeated his the whole army yet. Everyone's still really used to how Sadius ran the army, which was a little more relaxed. Yeah.
Right. Sometime near the end of this discussion, Dalinar noticed Renarin shifting uncomfortably in his seat. As the Azish scribes began explaining their code of rules and guidelines for the coalition, Renarin excused himself in a hoarse voice and left. Dalinar glanced at Navani, who seemed troubled. Yasna stood to follow, but was interrupted by a scribe bringing her a small sheaf of documents. She accepted them and moved to Navani's side so they could study them together. Yasna stood to follow, but was interrupted. Should we break? Dalinar was thinking, checking his forearm clock. They'd only been going for an hour, and the Azish were obviously excited by their guidelines. The Stormfather rumbled. What? Dalinar thought. Something is coming. A storm. Dalinar stood up, looking about the room, half expecting assassins to attack. His sudden motion caught the attention of one of the Azish viziers, a short man with a very large hat. Brightlord, the interpreter, asked at a word from the vizier. Dalinar could feel it. Something's wrong. Dalinar? Fenn asked. What are you talking about? Span reeds suddenly started blinking throughout the room. A dozen flashing rubies. Dalinar's heart sidestepped. Anticipation spren rose around him, streamers whipping from the ground. As the various scribes grabbing the blinking span reeds from boxes or belts and set them out to begin writing. Yasna didn't notice that one of hers was blinking. She was too distracted by what she and Navani were reading. The Everstorm just hit Shinovar, Queen Fenn finally explained, reading over a scribe's shoulder. Impossible, Ile Sadius said. It has only been 5 days since the last one. They come at 9-day intervals. Yes, well, I think we have enough confirmation, Fenn said, nodding toward the span reeds. The storm is too new, Tashav said. She pulled her shawl closer as she read. We don't know it well enough to truly judge its patterns. The reports from Steen say it is particularly violent this time, moving faster than before.
It's really, really interesting here because they've had a lifetime of time to study the high storms. And those high storms always act the same all the time.
Right, right.
And this new storm, they thought they had it pegged. They thought they had figured out its
9-day intervals.
Yeah, but now it's done something unexpected. And I like that. I like that there's a little bit of chaos in this that they can't really peg it down, right? It's really cool.
It would have been interesting if the Everstorm had its own countdown.
Right?
That it just kept getting, you know, like the intervals kept getting shorter and shorter. It's moving faster. How are we going to... hours yet. I forgot where I left off the storm. Dalinar felt cold. How long until it reaches us? Fenn asked. Hours yet, Tashav says. It can take a full day for the high storm to get from one side of Roshar to the other. And the Everstorm is slower, usually. It's moving faster, though, Yanagon said through his interpreter. How far away are our ships? How are we going to shelter them? Peace, Your Excellency, Fenn says. The ships are close, and the new docks, miles farther along the coast, are sheltered from both east and west. We merely need to make sure the fleet goes directly there, instead of stopping here to drop off troops. The room buzzed with conversations as the various groups received reports from their contacts in Tashik, who in turn would be relaying information from contacts in Erie, Steen, or even Shinovar. We should break for a short time, Dalinar told them. The others agreed, distracted, and separated into groups scattered about the room. Dalinar settled back in a seat, releasing a held breath. That wasn't so bad. We can deal with this. That wasn't it, the Stormfather said. He rumbled, his concerned voice growing very soft as he continued. There's more. Dalinar jumped back to his feet, instincts prompting him to thrust his hand to the side, fingers splayed, to summon a blade he no longer possessed.
So you had asked me several times these last couple of weeks when you're positing these theories about Oathbringer, and I said to you, I'm almost positive that Dalinar is not bound to Oathbringer anymore. He gave it up to Sadeas, and then Sadeas was killed, and he didn't re-bond it after that, right? Because they found it in the planters, and then they gave it to the Sadeases right away.
They gave it to
the Sadeas. This is a good like example of it, because he goes, throws his hand out to summon a sword that he doesn't have. He doesn't, he's not bonded to any sword right now. Yeah.
Bridge 4 responded immediately, dropping food from the table of victuals, grabbing spears. Nobody else seemed to notice. But notice what? There was no attack that came. Conversations continued on all sides. Yasna and Navani were still huddled side by side, reading. Navani gasped softly, safe hand going to her mouth. Yasna looked at Dalinar, lips drawn to a line. Their message wasn't about the storm, Dalinar thought, pulling his chair over to them. All right, he whispered, though they were far enough from the other groups to have gone, to have some privacy. What is it? A breakthrough was made in translating the dawn chant.
Oh,
that's good.
Remember the some of the people that were working on the Dawn Chant, the way that this all worked out was they got some keys from Dalinar's visions.
Mm-hmm.
And then remember that interlude with those two Ardents in the mountains who were both reading romance novels? Remember they were both secretly reading romance novels?
Well,
they both had this passion for the Dawn Chant, and they ended up, at the end of that interlude, it sounded like they were going to start working together to try to break it. And it sounds like they might have done it.
Navani continues here. Teams in Carbranth and the monasteries of Yaakoved have arrived at the news separately. Using the seed we provided through the visions, we are finally receiving translations. Well, that's good, right? Dalinar said. Yasna sighed. Oh, boy. Uncle, the piece that historians have been most eager to translate is called The Isle of Steel. Other sources claim it is old, perhaps the oldest document in written memory, said to be scribed by the heralds themselves. From the translation that finally came in today, the carving appears to be the account of someone who witnessed the very first coming of the Voidbringers, long, long ago, even before the first desolation. Blood of my father, Dalinar said, before the first desolation. The last desolation had happened more than 4,000 years ago. They were speaking of events lost to time. And can we read it? He asks. They came from another world.
So Navani's actually reading. Wow. You can see the double quotes here. So Navani is doing one of the things, Jack, that we love most in this series, is she's reading from a document. So we're getting a firsthand account reading, which is one of our favorite things, right?
They came from another world, Navani said, reading from her sheet. Using powers that we have been forbidden to touch. Dangerous powers of Spren and Surges. They destroyed their lands and have come to us begging. We took them in as commanded by the gods. What else could we do? They were a people forlorn, without a home, and our pity destroyed us. For their betrayal extended even to our gods, to Spren, stone, and wind. Beware the otherworlders, the traitors, those with tongues of sweetness, but with minds that lust for blood. Do not take them in. Do not give them succor. Well were they named Voidbringers, for they brought the void, the empty pit that sucks in emotion, a new god, their god. These Voidbringers know no songs. They cannot hear Roshar, and where they go, they bring silence. They look soft, with no shell, but they are hard. They have but one heart, and it cannot ever live. She lowered the page. What is with that?
What is with that?
Have we encountered anything like that?
This is the first time ever read this, or this is brand new knowledge.
They look soft, with no shell, but they are hard.
Keep reading.
She lowered the page. Dalinar frowned. It's nonsense, he thought. Yeah. Well, I'm sort of agreeing with that, but... Is it claiming that the first Parshmen who came to invade had no carapace? But how would the writer know that Parshmen should have carapace? And what is this about songs? It clicked. That was not written by a human, Dalinar whispered. No, uncle, Yasna said softly. Oh, dude. That's cool. The writer was a dawn singer, one of the original inhabitants of Roshar. The dawn singers weren't Spren, as theology had often postulated. Nor were they heralds. They were Parshmen. And the people they welcomed to their world, the otherworlders, were us, Dalinar whispered. Oh my god. That is amazing.
Read that last line, bro. Read it.
Dalinar whispered. Oh, dude, I've got goosebumps going crazy here. Hang on, let me just linger on "we're us" for a second, because... And the people they welcomed to their world, this is Yasna, the otherworlders were us, Dalinar whispers. He felt cold, like he'd been dunked in icy water. They named us Voidbringers. Oh, man. That's amazing. Wow. They're the invaders. They're the off-worlders.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
This is saying that there was another planet that the humans were on.
Right.
And they destroyed it because of their bond with Spren and surges. They used their surges and they destroyed their own world. And they came to Roshar begging for a place to live.
And they let them in.
They let them in.
These Dawn Singers.
The Dawn Singers did, which were like ancient Parshendi. And
they became hard out of necessity dealing with the humans.
Well, they were hard because of the world.
It says they were soft at the...
No, they were soft. The humans were soft. They had no shells.
Oh, humans had no care. Okay, sorry, it's claiming that the first Parshmen who came to invade had no carapace.
Yeah, Dalinar's confused there when he's saying it because he still thinks the writer is a human.
He still thinks, right. Wow, that's awesome. This is so cool. I love it. I love it. It's amazing.
Let's finish the chapter and then we have a lot to talk about.
That's incredible. And it really goes back to way back to my instincts with regards to
exactly, dude.
The Parshendi.
Exactly. You've been saying forever. Why are they the Voidbringers?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I just questioned. I didn't have any theories, and I certainly didn't suspect that.
You were on it for
the story
years,
was...
bro. You were on it for years.
Wow. But I didn't think at all that they were going with that. All of these humans. Now, hang on. Are they also extending these humanoids maybe to the Thalens as well?
All humans.
Well, are
all
Thalens
non-singers, non-listeners, non. Parshendi came from another world. The only people who were native to Roshar are the ones with carapace. And they evolved that way because of the harsh climate. They needed the armor. They needed the...
Wow.
Look at the entire ecosystem of Roshar. When you look at Roshar and everything that you've learned, flora, fauna, storms, great shells, all this, everything... Yeah. The people who belong here the most are the ones with the shells, the ones who evolved genetically to have protection from the storms.
Right.
The ones
right.
who don't belong here are the ones who are soft, who had to adapt to the storms. They didn't evolve that way.
Right.
When looking back at everything, now having this information, it's so fucking clear.
It makes complete sense.
Right.
Yeah. I love the... Well, and I think that we in our coverage, like you and I were talking about the possibility of that the term Voidbringers was misapplied somehow.
That was your baby for a long time, is that you thought that, you know, why are they being called Voidbringers? You thought anyone could probably be a Voidbringer, I guess.
Well, that's what I was kind of more interested in, I think, in the reading is applying Voidbringer to many different peoples or, you know, to not making it just, you know, about one people, let's say, or one, you know, like that just seemed to me too simple. But I really didn't think a lot about all of these humanoids being otherworlders. That did not occur to me.
So keep reading. There's a little more information here.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's amazing. It's mind-blowing. It's really great. And of course, Dalinar wrestling with all of this, Yasna wrestling with all of this. Mm-hmm. Are they going to share all of this information?
We'll keep going.
Yasna sighed. I have suspected this for a time. The first desolation was the invasion of humankind onto Roshar. We came here and seized this land from the Parshmen. After we accidentally used surge binding to destroy our previous world. That is the truth that destroyed the Radiance.
There it is. That's another friggin' thing right there.
Wow.
You want to know what the Recreance was all about?
Why they gave up their oaths?
It was because they realized that they were fighting a people who deserved to be here, and they were the ones who were the invaders.
Right.
They were the Voidbringers. It's why they en masse gave up their... They're like, what are we fighting for then?
Yeah. There's no honor in this.
No,
this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and of course, they've said, I think in the previous chapter we covered, that when Venli is brought into the vision with Dalinar, she says, you know, it was a game to you.
Mm-hmm.
It became sport to hunt us.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't expect the Otherworlders, but I certainly was not in favor of the way that the war was going and the reasons for it. Like, I was highly suspicious of that from the beginning. Right. Yeah. Wow. This complicates things, but deliciously so.
Well, it's funny because you were like, you know, in Way of Kings,
what?
When they started calling them, when Yasna was like, they're Voidbringers. When she told Shallan, remember with the
yeah, with this the is,
and you were like, no, I don't believe it. Like right away, you were like, I don't want to call them Voidbringers. That's not right.
Well, okay. So my approach back then was, I mean, just kind of falling for this whole versatilian mm-hmm. approach and academic, in the pursuit of truth as close as you can get to it. Mm-hmm. I just felt it was presumptuous. I just, from what we read in the first two books, claiming them to be void bringers and this label kind of just being this this perfect thing to describe them, it didn't seem like it was substantiated.
Right.
That's where I was coming from with mm-hmm. it. And of course, with a term like that, it's just I don't find it a terribly useful term. I mean, it becomes a useful term if what you wish is chaos and mm-hmm. a void, and you want to swallow up stars and suns and just collapse everything into a void. You know, the eye of Sauron, there are elder evils in D&D that would relish in this kind of thing.
It's about the god they brought, the void, the one that sucks in emotion. Where's the line here? Sorry. For they brought the void, the empty pit that sucks in emotion, a new god. Their god. So not only did come over, they brought a god with them, a god that sucks in emotion.
And is that Odium then? So yeah. They brought Odium here.
Yeah.
And does that mean that honor was... Oh, dude. Does that mean that honor had nothing to do with the humans?
Nothing at first.
So was honor amongst the Parshendi?
Yeah.
And basically... the Parshendi god cared about the humans and died for them. Is that where we're going?
It sounds like it.
Because that's incredible.
Venli said in the last chapters that we covered yesterday that the Spren abandoned them. Remember?
Spren.
How did the Spren abandon them for these creatures, for these humans? Remember?
Because they were drawn to the passions, their emotions.
I don't know. That's there's more to learn here, I think. But
hang on. So Spren are indigenous to Urshar.
Well, it sounds like they were not just indigenous to Urshar, because this Dawn Chant says that the humans, the Voidbringers, they destroyed their world with their power of
surges.
So that Spren do exist somewhere else as well.
Right. And they do have Shadesmar, which seems to be a realm between places.
Right. So
it's its own place.
There's definitely
an inverse of Roshar.
You've gained some knowledge here, but there is still some more knowledge that there's some pieces that are missing still.
Wow. I love it.
It's pretty cool.
It's really cool. And it's not Aelin on the chopping block. So
it's not Aelin dead. So that's good.
It's not Aelin dead, which is great. Okay. Wow. I was not anticipating this kind of a reveal, but this is awesome.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's amazing. Okay. The truth, that is the truth that destroyed the Radiance. Right. The Stormfather rumbled in his mind. Dalinar stared at that sheet of paper in Navani's hand. Such a small, seemingly unimportant object to have created such a pit inside of him. It's true, isn't it? He thought at the Stormfather. Storms, we're not the defenders of our homeland. We're the invaders. Oh, man. Nearby, Taravangian argued softly with his scribes, then finally stood up. He cleared his throat and the various groups slowly stilled. The Azish contingent had servants pull their chairs back toward the group, and Queen Fen returned to her place, though she didn't sit. She stood, arms folded and looking perturbed. "I have had disconcerting news," Taravangian said, "over the span read just now. It involves Bright Lord Kolin. I don't wish to be objectionable." "No," Fen said, "I've heard it too." I'm going to need an explanation. Agreed, Nora said. Dalinar stood up. I realize this is troubling. I haven't had time to adjust. Perhaps we could adjourn and worry about the storm first. We can discuss this later. Perhaps, Taravangian said. Yes, perhaps. But it is a problem. We have believed that ours is a righteous war, but this news of mankind's origins has me disconcerted. What are you talking about? Fenn said. Well, the news from the Vedan translators. Ancient texts manifesting that humans came from another world. Bah, Fenn says. Dusty books and ideas for philosophers. What I want to know about is this High King business. High King? Yanagon asked through an interpreter. I have an essay, Fenn said, slapping papers against her hand. From Zita, the Voiced, claiming that before King Elikar left for Alethkar, he swore to Dalinar to accept him as emperor. Nura, the vizier, leaped to her feet. What? Emperor is an exaggeration, Dalinar said, trying to reorient toward this unexpected attack. It's an internal Alethi matter. Navani stood beside him. My son was merely concerned about his political relation to Dalinar. We have prepared an explanation for you all, and our high princes can confirm that we are not looking to expand our influence to your nations. And this, Nura said, holding up some pages. Were you preparing an explanation for this as well? What is that? Dalinar asked, bracing himself. Accounts of two visions, Nura said, that you didn't share with us, in which you supposedly met and fraternized with a being known as Odium. Behind Dalinar, Lift gasped. He glanced toward her and the men of Bridge Four, who were muttering among themselves. This is bad, Dalinar thought. Too much. Mm-hmm. Too fast for me to control. Yasna leaped to her feet. This is obviously a concentrated attempt to destroy our reputation. Someone deliberately released all this information at the same time. Is it true? Nura asked in Alethi. Dalinar Colan, have you met with our enemy? Navani gripped his arm. Yasna subtly shook her head. Don't answer that. Yes, Dalinar said. Did he, Nura asked pointedly, did he tell you you'd destroy Roshar? What of this ancient record? Taravangian said. It claims that the Radiance already destroyed one world. Is that not what caused them to disband? They worried that their powers could not be controlled. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around this High King nonsense, Fenn said. How is it merely an internal Alethi matter if you've allowed another king to swear to you? Everyone started talking at once. Navani and Yasna stepped forward, responding to the attacks. But Dalinar only sank into his seat. It was all falling apart. A sword, as keen as any on a battlefield, had been rammed into the heart of his coalition. This is what you feared, he thought. A world that turns not upon force of armies, but upon the concerns of scribes and bureaucrats. And in that world, he had just been deftly outflanked.
So get hit from all sides here. High King,
man.
Meetings with Odium, the Voidbringers thing with the Dawn Chant, just not able to control everything. Pretty crazy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What a great chapter. Oh, my God. That's incredible.
So not what you expected, obviously.
Not what I expected, no. Not where I thought
everyone,
were
I think
go.
It's, you know, pretty solid that everyone that listens to our show has been waiting for you to find out about this Dawn Chant thing. Several messages have I received, is this going to be a live read?
I love it. I love it. What I'm so curious about is were the Spren brought with the humans to Roshar? Are the Sprens innocent actors in all of this, or are they as complex as the humans, as the Dawn Singers, as the, you know, the indigenous peoples of Roshar? Mm-hmm. You know, I that's what I wonder. And also I wonder and worry now about the destruction of a world using surge binding.
Right.
Who are our confirmed surge binders right now?
I mean, that's a little bit of a list here, but I mean, Shallan, Kaladin, Yasna, Dalinar, Lyft, Malata, potentially Venli. She's got timber.
Potentially.
I don't think she's said any. I don't know if she said any oaths yet, but Venli potentially.
The assassin in white.
The assassin in white. So Zeth, and then all of the Skybreakers.
Yeah.
And then like a whole bunch of potential Bridge 4 people are maybe close to becoming Radiance. And then there's like,
and this is not necessarily a good thing. Like, this is, if it destroyed one world, it could destroy another.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe giving these powers is the way for this kind of corruption or destruction. Maybe these, you know, like maybe the Knights Radiant are the problem.
Maybe.
Maybe there's no way to control those passions or powers in an environment where Odium is seeking to just corrupt.
That's actually my highlight of the chapter, is that
what?
It flips the narrative on its head a little bit. You know, we were, through these books,
really
we
does.
Were reading, like, some people were either influenced by Vornism or by, you know, like backwater ideas that they would call the Radiance the Lost Radiance, and that would be a derogatory term, and they would fear them, right? And then others would believe that the Radiance were here to help us, right? And for us as readers, we leaned more towards the Radiance being good because we, you know, we love Kaladin, we love our friends, and then now it's like maybe those people who feared them actually had a reason to.
Right.
Yeah. I like how it flips it a little bit.
Now, we were getting a Lethe greed with regards to Shardplate. I find it fascinating that Shardplate ends up becoming an extension, if you will, of what the Parshendi use in defense against the humans, right?
What do you mean?
Well, it seems to mirror, like, they have carapace.
Right.
The humans come soft. Oh, but there's shard plate. I'll give you your own carapace, and it'll be greater. It'll be better.
Well, that comes with the bond, right? That comes with the nail bond.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But there's still, like I said earlier, there's still quite a lot of history that is like leaving these blank spots for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a little bit more of an idea of how things started.
That's
on this
amazing.
Planet.
Love it. Love this
crazy,
live
eh?
Read. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
I'm grateful. It was not what I was anticipating
do
at
you,
all. So that's
you
great.
You want to read another chapter?
Unbelievable. Read another one?
Yeah, you want to read another one? How about
is
we take a 5-minute break?
Live
you
read?
Get a coffee and we'll come
is
back.
Is it live
and
read worthy?
Yeah. Dude, we have two more chapters for you to read.
We're not just reading that one. We're reading more.
No, you're going to read two more right now.
Because it's live read worthy.
It's this is the thing. This chapter was a bigger chapter with more information.
This was huge, bro.
And then the next two are the end of part four, but they're small and not really worthy for us to do, you know, schedule a new recording or to do them in a separate episode.
My God.
So we're just going to let you read. We're going to let you cook, bro.
And to finish part four.
Yeah.
Right
so let's
now.
Take a 5-minute break. Let's go for a pee
You're
break.
Kidding.
You could get another coffee. And
a
then we're going to And then you're going to read the rest of these chapters.
Dude. Okay. All right. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's rock and roll. Yeah. I'm just on a high right now.
It's great. It's perfect.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's everything I could have wanted out of this series, I think, is this realization. It just opens it up for so much more complexity with regards to where these humans came from and how their world died and whether Sanderson has written anything about that. Like, is that what other books that he's written?
There is a little bit more information out there about some of this stuff, but I can't really talk to you about it. So,
no, yeah, that's incredible. And you know, I didn't have the particulars in correct at all. Really, I mean, I didn't voice at all ever that I thought these humanoids were off-worlders. I was fascinated the more that we discovered that the possibility was there that there could be realms between worlds and our new character. Oh boy, what's her name? Who's traveling with the heroes in Shadesmar?
Azure.
She's from
Azur.
Azur. She's from another world. Yeah. She's from someplace else. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm fascinated. I just didn't really put that all together. And they brought Odium here.
Yeah.
And what I'm really excited about, is that Honor was on Roshar or was a part of this world and was interested in these humans and then died in defense of them.
Right. There's, like I said, there is more.
Really cool.
There is more history, some more ancient history here to be uncovered. So,
yeah, because that even if it's incorrect, just my thinking about it, like honor being amongst the Parshendi, Parshendi having a connection more to honor than they do. I like that idea.
It sounds like the allegiance of the gods switched at some point.
The allegiance
because
of the gods
Voidbringers, the Parshendis, the Parshmen, the singers, listeners, that group of people are now kind of with Odium. And the humans brought Odium with them. So there was a switch at some point. Something happened. And we're not really sure what. I mean, where you are in the series and with your knowledge, you don't really know what it was. But something happened for that to switch.
They bring Odium. Odium poisons the Parshendi and is struggling to maintain control over the humans of Roshar because of what Honor has done or other gods or Spren.
Yeah, we don't know.
Man,
yeah. Don't know.
Wow.
Those are all really good thoughts.
That's amazing. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's amazing.
So do you want to read another chapter?
Let's continue.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
let's finish it.
I didn't expect that. That's I'm feeling very tickled this morning. It's nice.
Yeah.
Oh, unless I'm up for something really bad right now.
Just keep reading. Stop being cryptic.
I don't want anything bad. Chapter 112. Sure. For the living, it's called. Mm-hmm. Okay. I am certain there are 9 unmade. There are many legends and names that I could have misinterpreted, conflating 2 unmade into 1. In the next section, I will discuss my theories on this. Wow. Many legends and names that I could have misinterpreted.
So Hesse's admitting, like, oh, you know, I may have made some mistakes, but she's pretty sure there are 9 unmade. And she thinks that it's possible that maybe I attributed 2 things to 1 unmade and they're actually supposed to be separate. But then she's going to discuss her theory on this later. on the next episode of Hesse's Mythica.
Kaladin remembered a woman's kiss. Tara had been special. The dark-eyed daughter of an assistant quartermaster, she had grown up helping with her father's work. Though she was 100% a Lethe, she preferred dresses of an old-fashioned Thalen style, which had an apron-like front with straps over the shoulders and skirts that ended right below the knee. She'd wear a button shirt underneath, often in a bright color, brighter than most dark eyes could afford. Tara knew how to squeeze the most out of her spheres. And that day, Kaladin had been sitting on a stump, shirt off, sweating. Ooh la la.
Sexy Kaladin.
Sexy Kaladin. The evening was growing cold as the sun set, and he basked in the last warmth. His spear resting across his lap, he toyed with a rock of white, brown, and black, alternating colors. Remember when Renarin used to be focused on rocks?
No, it was Tien.
Or Tien, sorry, Tien.
Yeah, Kaladin's brother Tien was the one who loved the rocks, and that's why I think Kaladin is doing this. This is, again, another moment where Kaladin's having a memory. It's not a flashback per se,
but he's
having a memory of another time in his life, yeah.
The warmth from the sun was mirrored as someone warm hugged him from behind, wrapping her arms across his chest. Kaladin rested a calloused hand on Tara's smooth one, drinking in her scent of starched uniforms, new leather, and other clean things. You're done early, he said. I thought there were green vines out to outfit today. I have the new girl doing the rest, she says. I'm surprised. I know how much you like this part. Storms, she said, slipping around in front of him. They get too embarrassed when you measure them. Hold on, kid. I'm not making a pass at you because I'm putting a measuring tape up against your chest, I swear. She lifted his spear, looking it over with a critical eye, testing the balance. I wish you'd let me requisition a new one for you. I like that one. Took me forever to find one long enough.
Okay, so when I was reading this to prep for the episode, I thought it was really funny that he talks about how long the spear is. It took him forever to find one long enough.
I wonder
if this is the same spear that killed Helleran.
The one,
like, I wonder if this is the same spear
in
he used
Amaran's to kill, camp.
Yeah, when he was in Amaran's camp. Like, I just wonder if this is the same spear that killed Shallan's brother.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Interesting.
Because and it ended up not needing to be long enough for that, because I think he kills Helleran with a broken spearhead, so it didn't really matter
how long
the spear needed to be, because he was still able to kill a shardbearer with like the end of a spear. Do you know what I mean? So I just thought it was really kind of funny. Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's interesting. She peered along the length of the weapon to make sure it was straight. She would never trust it, as she hadn't personally requisitioned it for him. She wore green today under a brown skirt, her black hair tied back in a tail, slightly plump, with a round face and firm build. Tara's beauty was a subtle thing, like an uncut gemstone. Oh, I like this Tara. I like.
Me likey.
I like. The more you saw of it, the more you discovered of its natural facets, the more you loved it, until one day it struck you that you'd never known anything as wonderful. Any young boys among the green vines? Kaladin asked, standing up and pocketing Tien's stone. I didn't notice, she says. He grunted, waving to Gull, one of the other squad leaders. You know, I like to watch for kids who might need a little extra looking out for. Even back then, eh?
Yeah. Well, Tien's dead now, so he's already started that, yeah.
I know, but I was busy, she says. We got a caravan from Kolinar today. She leaned in close to him. There was a real flower in one of the packages. I traded in some favors. You know, I've been wanting you to try some of my father's Thalen bread. I thought maybe we'd fix it tonight. Your father hates me. He's coming around. Besides, he loves anyone who compliments his bread. I have evening practice, he says. You just got done practicing. I just got done warming up. He looked to her and then grimaced. I organized the evening practice, Tara. I can't just skip it. Besides, I thought you were going to be busy all evening. Maybe tomorrow. For lunch? He kissed her on the cheek and reclaimed his spear. He'd taken only a step away when she spoke. I'm leaving, Cal, she said from behind. He stumbled over his own feet and then spun about. What? I'm transferring, she said. They offered me a scribe's job in Morn's vault, with the High Prince's house. It's a good opportunity, particularly for someone like me. Yeah, but he gaped. You're leaving? I wanted to tell you over dinner, not out here in the cold. It's something I have to do. Father's getting older, and he's worried he'll end up being shipped to the Shattered Plains. If I can get work, he can join me. Kaladin put a hand to his head. She couldn't just leave, could she? Tara walked over, stood on the tips of her toes, and kissed him lightly on the lips. Could you not go? He asked. She shook her head. Maybe I could get a transfer, he said, to the High Prince's standing house guard. Would you do that? No, he wouldn't. Not while he carried that stone in his pocket, and not while the memory of his brother dying was fresh in his mind. Not while light-eyed High Lords got boys killed in petty fights. Oh, Cal, she whispered and then squeezed his arm. Maybe someday you'll learn how to be there for the living, not just for the dead.
Hmm. Wow.
It's nice.
That's great. After she left, he got two letters from her talking about her life in Morn's vault. He had paid someone to read them to him. He never sent responses because he was stupid. Because he didn't understand. Because men make mistakes when they're young and angry. Being because she had been right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, we're getting some good stuff here.
Kind of nice, really to good. See him like have like a normal relationship with someone. Like just mm-hmm. like a... We had heard her name before in the past books, but
we have,
it's just nice to meet her and nice to like be like, wow, he actually had like a well-adjusted relationship and like, and they parted on like, you know, okay terms and stuff too. Like it wasn't like, I don't know. It was really cool to see just a normal part of him.
We get another POV change here. A Kaladin shouldered his harpoon, leading his companions through the strange forest. They'd flown part of the way, but needed to conserve what little stormlight they had left. So, they'd spent the last 2 days hiking. Trees and more trees, life spren floating among them. The occasional bobbing souls of fish. Syl kept saying that they were lucky they hadn't encountered any anger spren, or other predators. To her, this forest was strangely silent, strangely empty. The jungle-style trees had given way to taller, more statuesque ones, with deep crimson trunks and limbs like burnt red crystals, that at the ends burst into small collections of minerals. The rugged obsidian landscape was full of deep valleys and endless towering hills. Kaladin was beginning to worry that, despite the motionless sun to provide an unerring way to gauge their heading, they were going in the wrong direction. Storms, Bridge Boy, Adolin says, hiking up the incline after him. Maybe a break? At the top, Kaladin said. Without stormlight, Shallan trailed farthest behind, pattern at her side. Exhaustion spren circled in the air above like large chickens. Though she tried to push herself, she wasn't a soldier, and often was the biggest limitation to their pace. Of course, without her, map-making skills and memory of Thalen City's exact location, they probably wouldn't have any idea which way to go. Fortunately, there was no sign of pursuit. Still, Kaladin couldn't help worrying that they were moving too slowly. "Be there," Tara had told him, "for the living." He urged them up this hillside, past a section of broken ground, where the obsidian had fractured like layers of creme that hadn't hardened properly. Worry pulled him forward, step after relentless step. He had to get to the Oath Gate. He would not fail like he had in Kolinar. A single glowing windspren burst alight next to him as he reached the top of the hill. Cresting it, he found himself overlooking a sea of souls. Thousands upon thousands of candle flames bobbed about in the next valley over, moving above a grand ocean of glass beads. Thalen City. Adolin joined him, and then finally Shallan and the three Spren. Shallan sighed and settled to the ground, coughing softly from the effort of the climb. Amid the sea of lights were two towering Spren, much like the ones they'd seen in Kolinar. One sparkled a multitude of colors, while the other shimmered an oily black. Both stood tall, holding spears as long as a building. The sentries of the Oath Gate, and they didn't look corrupted. Beneath them, the device itself manifested as a large stone platform with a wide, sweeping white bridge running over the beads and to the shore. That bridge was guarded by an entire army of enemy Spren, hundreds, perhaps thousands strong. Hmm. Oh, man.
So it took them all this time to get there, and now there's an army blocking their way.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. That's what we call not good.
That's what we call a not good.
Yeah.
What's that chapter called?
For the Living.
For the Living, yeah. Oh, that's really good. And you know what I love as well? Is I love these... memories or voices that occur with so many characters. Not just the Stormfather's advice to... Mm-hmm. To Dalinar, but also he hears Tara's voice.
Yeah.
Or he might hear his father, the surgeon.
Yeah, Liren, yeah.
I really like that these memories of people, it's kind of like in life when you're sort of, you're heading through life and you remember
the lessons you have, they stay with you.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good chapter.
Well,
any,
that's, a,
any,
that's a great chapter. Highlight?
Highlight? Maybe Tara?
Well, I think Tara, yeah. Like, I mean, I love it. Round-faced. I liked the describing her beauty as being, like, uncut gem and just... And I like the round face. I don't know. There's something I think
I like
I
a round
really
face.
Like. I do. I enjoy a good round face.
Yeah.
I like it. I like this bit with Kaladin. And I also like the fact that they part without any, like, you know, disaster among them.
No...
Like it seems like they could pick things up.
Yeah,
if they
it
met
sounds
again.
Like they. It sounds you like know? It could. Who knows? Maybe
so what happened to her?
Yeah, maybe she's out in Morn's Vault still, pining for Kaladin. And maybe when all this is done, they could hook
I'm
back
in.
Up.
Let's go to Morn's Vault right now, Chapter 113, Morn's Vault. The wedding of Tara and Kaladin.
Yeah, the end of the series.
Oh,
everyone
oh,
lived
wait,
happily
no, it's not
ever after. No, and no one died.
And no one died. Yeah, there's no die.
Yeah.
No die. Okay, so this is the final chapter of part 4.
Yeah, this is it.
This is it.
Yep.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Okay, I want to keep reading.
Yeah.
Chapter 113, The Thing Men Do Best. Uh-oh.
What is the thing men do best? I think it's breakdancing. It's
that's
like
it's
that.
The last thing I
and
thought you were going to say.
That's the way it is.
That's funny.
Sorry.
That's the way it is. The electric boogaloo. Yeah, I think it's breakdancing.
It might be. It might be.
I don't know. I think maybe... No, let's just go with breakdancing.
Yep.
The thing that men do best. If I'm correct, hang on. I'm in mid reading and I'm
mid coffee. Sip.
More coffee. If I'm correct and my research true, chapter 113, then the question remains, who is the ninth unmade? Yeah. It would be helpful, Hesse, if you just tell us.
It'd be nice. Stop holding back the information.
Or Mr. Sanderson. Brandon?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Stop effing around.
Yeah. Stop. Stop messing around, Mr. Sanderson. Who is the ninth unmade? Is it truly Diagonarthus? Diagonarthus. If so, could their actions have actually caused the complete destruction of Aemia? Hang on. We've had that name before, Aemia.
Yeah, it's the place where the smoke Soulcaster went to. Remember where she went with those people and they were going to go to that like destroyed land to look for riches and gemstones?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and it's a place that like the Aemians are pretty much extinct now, except for potentially the Sleepless that we met and Axes the Collector.
Oh, yeah.
Axes could be Aemian as well.
Axes?
Axes. And Axes the Collector. Yeah. And the Sleepless might be from Aemia. And you know what's really funny is that those two types of people are not human.
Right. So they
could have been
so
here.
They're otherworlders from yet another?
They could be from Roshar.
Is Aemia an area on Roshar,
it
or
is,
Aemia
yeah.
is someplace else?
It's,
okay, sorry.
I don't have my. I'm not close to my map.
Yeah,
like
your
I
map's back there. That's okay.
But it is a landmass on Roshar. Just one second, please. Right here. So look, I'm holding up a map for Jack. This is the Roshar. Aemia.
Yeah, got it. Frostlands.
Oh God.
Aemia is.
I'm making a big noise here. Aemia is this island right off the coast here.
Okay, so the western edge an island. Got it. Okay. Huh. Thanks for that, by the way. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. That's a lot of work for no payoff.
I like the fact that you held it up. I mean, I could have just clicked on a, you know.
Yeah, you could have done some research, but, you know,
but
it is.
I like the fact that you held up your book. It's great. Okay. If so, could their actions have actually caused the complete destruction of Aemia? So, what state is Aemia in right now?
It's like completely destroyed. It's like a wasteland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. There's some kind of huge war that happened there. And so, Diagathanaris could have been the reason why it's destroyed.
Why it's destroyed. Okay. Dalinar stood alone in the rooms Queen Fen had given him. Staring out the window, looking west, toward Shinovar, far beyond the horizon. A land with strange beasts, like horses, chickens, and humans. Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Remember how you keep asking me about why
they
there are certain
the horses.
Things? There are certain things of on Roshar that seem like they come from a human world, like maybe our world, and they don't match up with the axe hounds, and they don't match up with these and that.
Right.
Rabbits, chickens. But,
so they brought this with them too.
Yeah.
So are we headed for a connection to Earth?
I don't think so. I want you to bask in a mystery and I want you to live in a place of uncertainty, but I don't want you thinking going forward that these could be Earthlings. These are not Earthlings. I know that much.
Okay. These are Corellians. These are
Corellians. Yes.
These are Corellians.
Yeah, they're from the inner. Okay. They're from outer space. Yeah.
All right. Horses, chickens, and humans. He'd left the other monarchs arguing in the temple below. Anything he said only seemed to widen the rifts among them. They didn't trust him. They never really trusted him. That's not fair.
No.
He earned their trust.
Yeah.
Like he. That's not entirely fair for
he
him.
He should have
his
been
deception.
He should have told them about the visions with Odium. The you know, the bad guy is
the experience,
forcing his way into the visions, and I, you know, I haven't met him on my own. He comes in and he takes over, so I'm staying away from the visions. We don't want him getting access to me, kind of thing. He should have just said that.
Yeah. Why didn't he?
Right.
Did he tell Navani about the Odium?
He did.
Vision?
Yeah, because she
did Yasna
because
know
they
about it?
They know about it because she transcribed the visions. Right?
His deception proved them right. Storms, he felt furious with himself. He should have released those visions. Should have immediately told the others about Elokar. There had simply been so much piling on top of him. His memories, his excommunication, worry for Adolin and Elokar. Part of him couldn't help but be impressed by how deftly he'd been outmaneuvered. Mm-hmm. Impressed. That's... Queen Fen worried about Dalinar being genuine. The enemy had delivered perfect proof that Dalinar had hidden political motives. Nura and the Azish worried that the powers were dangerous, whispering of lost radiance. To them, the enemy indicated that Dalinar was being manipulated by evil visions, and to Taravangian, who spoke so often of philosophy, the enemy suggested that their moral foundation for the war was a sham. Or maybe that dart was for Dalinar himself. What, like a...
like a smoke? Like a cigarette?
Like a little cigarette.
Or maybe he should go out for a smoke. Yo, you got an extra dart?
Yeah, you got an extra dart. Taravangian said that a king was justified in doing terrible things in the name of the state, but Dalinar, for once, he'd assumed what he was doing was right. Did you really think you belonged here? The Stormfather asked. That you were native to Roshar? Yes, maybe, Dalinar said. I thought maybe we came from Shinovar originally. That is the land you were given, the Stormfather said. A place where the plants and animals you brought here could grow.
Right. Which is why we always hear about grass. Right? The grass comes from... the grass that Risen is supposed to try to keep alive comes from Shinovar. And grass comes from, like, a human world.
We weren't able to confine ourselves to what we were given. When has any man ever been content with what he has? When has any tyrant ever said to himself, "This is enough"? Dalinar whispered, remembering words Gavilar had once spoken. The Stormfather rumbled. The Almighty kept this from his radiance, Dalinar said. When they discovered it, they abandoned their vows. It is more than that. My memory of all of this is strange. First, I was not fully awake. I was but the spren of a storm. Then I was like a child, changed and shaped during the frantic last days of a dying god. But I do remember. It was not only the truth of humankind's origin that caused the recreants. It was the distinct, powerful fear that they would destroy this world as men like them had destroyed the one before. The Radiants abandoned their vows for that reason, as will you. I will not, Dalinar says. I won't let my Radiants retread the fate of their predecessors. Won't you? Wow.
This is why the Stormfather didn't trust Kaladin. This is like, you're going
to
kill my daughter. You're going to take Syl, and when you abandon your oath, she's going to die and become one of the
eyeless,
the dead sprens.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dalinar's attention was drawn to a solemn group of men leaving the temple below. Bridge 4, spears held on slumped shoulders, heads bowed as they quietly marched down the steps. Dalinar scrambled out of his villa and ran down the steps to intercept the bridgeman. "Where are you going?" he demanded. They halted, falling into ranks at attention. "Sir," Teft said, "we thought we'd head back to Urithiru. We left some of the men behind, and they deserve to know about this business with the Ancient Radiance. What we've discovered doesn't change the fact that we are being invaded," Dalinar said. "Invaded by people trying to reclaim their homeland," Sigzil said. "Storms, I'd be mad too." "We're supposed to be the good guys, you know," Leighton said, "fighting for a good cause, for once in our storming lives."
Mm-hmm.
Echoes of his own thoughts, Dalinar found he couldn't formulate an argument against that. "We'll see what Cal says," Teft replies. "Sir, all respect, sir. But we'll see what he says. He knows the right of things, even when the rest of us don't."
Hmm. Oh, man, I love their faith in Cal. Eh?
Yeah. Like, he'll tell us if it's okay to keep going, kind of thing.
If he never returns, Dalinar thought. What if none of them return? It had been 4 weeks. How long could he keep pretending that Adolin and Elikar were alive out there somewhere? That pain hid behind the rest, taunting him. The bridgemen gave Dalinar their unique cross-armed salute, and then left without waiting to be dismissed. Wow. Things are changing.
Yeah.
In the past, honor was able to guard against this, the Stormfather told him. He convinced the Radiance that they were righteous, even if this land hadn't originally been theirs. Who cares what your ancestors did when the enemy is trying to kill you right now? But in the days leading to the Recreants, honor was dying. When that generation of knights learned the truth, honor did not support them. He raved, speaking of the Dawn Shards, ancient weapons used to destroy the Tranquiline Halls. Honor promised that Surgebinders would do the same to Rishar. Odium claimed the same thing, Dalinar says. He can see the future, though only cloudily. Regardless, I understand now as I never did before. The Ancient Radiance didn't abandon their oaths of pettiness. They tried to protect the world. I blame them for their weakness, their broken oaths. But I also understand. You have cursed me, human, with this capacity.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, eh?
His bond with Dalinar has changed him.
You have cursed me with this understanding.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing to say.
The meeting in the temple seemed to be breaking up. The Azish contingent started down the steps. "Our enemy hasn't changed," Dalinar said to them. "The need for a coalition is as strong as ever." The young emperor, being carried in a palanquin, didn't look at him. Oddly, the Azish didn't make for the Oath Gate, instead taking a path down into the city. Only Vizier Nura idled to speak to him. "Yasna Kolin might be right," she said in Azish. "The destruction of our world, your secret visions, this business with you being High King, it seems too great a coincidence for it all to come at once. Then you can see that we're being manipulated." "Manipulated by the truth, Kolin," she said, meeting his eyes. "That Oath Gate is dangerous. These powers of yours are dangerous. Deny it." "I cannot. I will not found this coalition on lies. You already have."
Mm-hmm.
He drew in a sharp breath. Nura shook her head. "We will take the scout ships and join the fleet carrying our soldiers. Then we will wait out this storm. After that, we will see. Teravangian has said we may use his vessels to return to our empire without needing to use the Oath Gates." She walked off after the Emperor, eschewing the palanquin waiting to carry her.
Isn't that so nice of Teravangian to do? "Oh, you can use my boats. You don't have to take the Oath Gates. You don't have to open the Oath Gates to your home and maybe have the Alethi come and attack you. You can use my boats." So nice. So nice of him.
So what's he gonna do with that?
It's what I've been saying to you before, man. Every single time Taravangian's name is uttered or he's in any scene, you have to question it. You have to question everything he's doing.
Oh, that's not good.
It's awesome. It makes for a fun read that when every time you see that name, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah. Wow, I don't know what to say about that. Our enemy hasn't changed. The young emperor being carried on a palanquin didn't look at him oddly. Vizier Nura of the Azish.
Mm-hmm.
So could Taravangian get control of the Azish with this maneuver, with this trusting of using his ships?
But he's definitely doing something.
Okay, she walked off the... Okay, others drifted down the steps around him. Vedan high princes who gave excuses, Thalen light eyes from their guild councils who avoided him. The Alethi high princes and scribes expressed solidarity, but Alethkar couldn't do this on its own. Queen Fenn was one of the last to leave the temple. Will you leave me too? Dalinar asks. She laughed. To go where, old hound? An army is coming this way. I still need your famous Alethi infantry. I can't afford to throw you out. Such bitterness. Oh, did it show? I'm going to check on the city's defenses. If you decide to join us, we'll be at the walls. I'm sorry, Fenn, Dalinar said, for betraying your trust. She shrugged. I don't really think you intend to conquer me, Colin, but oddly, I can't help wishing... I did have to worry. Best I can tell, you've become a good man right in time to bravely sink with this ship. That's commendable, until I remember that the Black Thorn would have long since murdered everyone trying to sink him. Fenn and her consort, what's that?
That's my highlight of the chapter. Is her saying, it's all nice and well that you've become a better man. But
right.
The Blackthorn would not have been outmaneuvered this way. He would have literally killed anyone trying.
Right.
And, like, it's nice that you're here, but I kind of need the Blackthorn. Like, I need... Like, it's nice that you've become a good person, but the person I need is, you know, my country's going to get invaded. I need someone to, like, really fucking fight. I love it. I think it's a really cool thing.
I think... I wasn't quite taking it quite that way. I was taking it that the Blackthorn would have just, you know, if all of these accusations were coming in against him, then he would just execute everyone around him. Just forget it.
Yeah.
If you don't want my help, if you don't want to, you know, if you don't want this coalition.
I think what she's saying is, you know, like, I remember that the Blackthorn would have long since murdered everyone trying to sink him. So anyone who's part of the reason why all this stuff came out would have already been dead, because he would have already killed them, kind of thing.
He would have already killed them, yeah.
Yeah.
Fenn and her consort climbed into a palanquin. People continued to trickle past, but eventually Dalinar stood alone before the quiet temple. I'm sorry, Dalinar, Taravangian said softly from behind. Dalinar turned, surprised to find the old man sitting on the steps. I assumed everyone had the same information and that it would be best to air it. I didn't expect all of this. This isn't your fault, Dalinar said. And yet... He stood up, then walked slowly down the steps. I'm sorry, Dalinar. I fear I can no longer fight beside you. Why? Dalinar said. Taravangian, you're the most pragmatic ruler I've met. Aren't you the one who talked to me about the importance of doing what was politically necessary? And that is what I must do now, Dalinar. I wish I could explain. Forgive me. He ignored Dalinar's pleas, limping down the stairs. Moving stiffly, the old man climbed into a palanquin and was carried away. Dalinar sank down on the steps. I tried my best to hide this, the Stormfather said. So we could continue living a lie? It is, in my experience, the thing men do best. Men do best living in a lie?
Yeah.
Don't insult us, Dalinar says. What? Is this not what you've been doing these last 6 years?
pretending that you aren't a monster, pretending that you didn't kill her, Dalinar. Dalinar winced. He made a fist, but there was nothing here he could fight. He dropped his hand to his side, shoulders drooping. Finally, he climbed to his feet and quietly trudged up the stone steps to his villa. The end of part four.
The end of part four. Holy jeez. It's been coming for a while.
I'm turning the page.
No.
I don't care. Interludes.
It's, you can read the three interlude names if you want.
Interludes, Venli, Risen, and Teft. Amazing.
Funsies.
Well, that was exciting.
Yeah.
And amazing.
Yeah.
Highlight for that chapter?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, oh, that was a heart. What's it called again? The thing men, do best. They live in a lie. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a harsh chapter.
But it kind of explains a little bit more of what we were talking about before. The Stormfather kind of gives a little bit more background. I love it.
You know what I
love this series of chapters. They're great.
My highlight from that one is Queen Fenn.
Yeah, me too. That's what I have written down.
Because so. I think that she's, out of any of them, she sees through the BS of this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think she is going to be caught up in Teravangian's net. I think she can see that Dalinar has been outmaneuvered here.
Right.
And she said, you know, she would agree with the, it's too circumstantial, it's too convenient. Even the other Azish Vizier was saying it was convenient that Everything was coming out at once.
Yeah, she even acknowledged, we have to acknowledge the fact that someone did do this. This was a planned, coordinated attack, like a political attack.
Political attack, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing.
Pretty
it's incredible.
Cool. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, very great. And the Voidbringers, like, oh my God, like... Off-worlders.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really cool.
It is pretty cool.
But it adds, you know, but where do you go from here? They're invaders. Where do you go?
Yeah.
How do you solve this with the Parshendi? The Parshendi now are being compromised by Odium, whom the humans may very well have brought here to this world.
Right.
Maybe that's how Odium... As I was saying to you with these powers, maybe that's how Odium does it.
It's tricky. It's going to be really fun to see how they deal with this information and where, mm-hmm. you know, like our main characters lie, right? Like the Bridge Four is going to wait for Kaladin.
Oh,
they're going to wait to see what Kaladin
like
is. And Kaladin is kind of struggling
leaving.
With the same thing, right? Who do I protect? Who do I know to protect?
Well, you know, you can't not protect someone because they were deceived or don't have the right information.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is compromised from information, from poor information,
mm-hmm.
You could have a serious problem in that the information could be so dangerous that it has turned a people into an immovable or unreasonable entity.
Right.
And then it clearly becomes your enemy because there is no room for change. There's no room for dialectic.
Mm-hmm.
No room for a conversation.
Right.
I don't think that's where these peoples are at.
I don't think so
on
either.
On Roshar. I mean, I think that there are forces that want to paint things that way. Odium, I think, certainly is one who does. But, you know, Esh and I, oh, man, I really miss Esh and I. I really feel like her instincts were right about all of this. You know, her instincts about...
Hopefully some of that will rub off on Venli, because we still have Venli, so maybe hopefully...
I know. I just feel like Venli... It's funny. I feel like losing Esh and I is... it still guts me, I find.
Yeah.
Like Venli is bitter. Like when we saw her last in the vision, I mean, she is bitter. And, and you know, it's perfectly understandable behavior.
I feel, you know, though, you know, like that scene, we talked about this already, but that chapter made a course change for her, because you said Dalinar said things, but it was the doing, it was the showing that mattered to her. And when he tried to save her,
he was telling her,
there might be a little bit of a change in her opinion about things now that she saw Dalinar try to save her from that pain. So anyways, let's not dwell too much on stuff that we've already covered. I would really like to get to the info dump because, you know, Buzzkill Joe is in attendance. He's listening. So now I have to read everything properly the way he's written it, so that this way I don't get yelled at later.
Okay, let's do it. Let's jump in.
So we first off want to say thank you very much to Buzzkill Joe for all the work that he puts into the info dump. We really appreciate it. Chapter 111, Ilya Steele. Thalen a gemstone reserve. We said this earlier, the main Thalen bank. It's a fortress of a building at the front of the ancient ward, which is awesome. I feel like it's just this, like, it's like a D&D place where we're going to go and try to steal some gems. It sounds awesome. Bridge 4 got some new scribes. They're wearing Havas, but they have the Bridge 4 patch on their sleeves, which is really, really cool. We get this name drop here of Zeta the Voiced, the pen name of Dova, the Ardent that discovered the diagram and joined it. So this was really interesting in chapter 107 in Oathbringer, but we need some way to disseminate the information without compromising ourselves. Assign it to Dova. Have her write a scathing anonymous essay, then leak it to Tashik. Leak the translations from the Dawn Chant the same day. I want it all to strike at once. So this is to remind us what Taravangian had planned the whole time, which is really, really great.
Right.
Thalen merchant and military divide. The Thalen merchants cannot be forced to obey the military. It's insulting to suggest, as Dalinar may have made a social faux pas just saying it to Queen Fenn's son. It's pretty funny. I do like that line where he says that Yasna would have just literally taken control of all the banks and just funded the military. Alethi and Makabaki Union. It has been centuries since the last political union between two countries. Halam Kal and the Princess of Yazir might be the next. So that's kind of interesting that there kind of might be a country union here that might really strengthen these two countries. I really like that. That's really cool. We get a little bit more information here about the sibling. There is another Spren, like the Stormfather and the Night Watcher, sleeping somewhere. Said the Night Watcher is like you, and there are others, though, the Spren like you, or the Night Watcher Spren, that are shadows of gods. They're not with us. Are they in hiding? No, they're slumbering. The sibling has been mentioned before in the gemstone records. Here are some quotes. My research in the cognitive reflection of Spren at the tower has been deeply illustrative. Some thought that the sibling had withdrawn from men by intent, but I find counter to that theory. Another quote. The wilting of plants and the general cooling of the air is disagreeable. Yes, but some of the tower's functions remain in place. The increased pressure, for example, persists. Here's two more. Something is happening to the sibling. I agree it is true, but the division among the Knights Radiance is not to blame. Our perceived worthiness is a separate issue. And then another, this last one here. Good night, dear Irithiru. Good night, sweet sibling. Good night, Radiance. It sounds like these quotes are saying that the sibling might be connected to Urithiru somehow, which is really, really interesting. The Everstorm normally
the sibling,
comes...
Could the sibling be Urithiru? Like, remember we were discussing last time with the veins and the...
Yeah, and how, like, the emeralds and rubies seemed like to be a heart, and that these veins
so
of
is
garnet
that, is
could
that
be...
the slumbering?
Maybe. We don't know. We'll have to keep reading.
Really?
The Everstorm normally comes every 9 days. The latest is more violent and moving faster every 4 days, seems. Ilya Steele, that's the Donchant part, likely the oldest document in written memory. So, yeah, it's really cool. It's an account by a Dawn Singer, so an ancient parchment that recounts the arrival of the Otherworlders. And then he has here a little moment. I'm going to read it to you because it doesn't really give anything away. He's labeling it maybe as foreshadowing. Any larger gemstones, Renarin asked, turned towards them. Anywhere in the city? Sure, lots of them, Fen's son said. Some really nice pieces, like in every city. But why, Brightlord? Because, Renarin said. And he didn't say anything more. So just a really kind of cryptic nugget here from Renarin. Maybe we should keep our eyes and our ears open for anything that could come. When we know that when Renarin speaks, there's a little bit more behind it, right? Like the kid got really, really uncomfortable right before all that stuff broke in the meeting, and he had to get up and leave.
He did.
I've always loved the theory of, is Renarin sitting through a meeting while he's at a different place in a different time?
Yes, I know. I love that too.
You know, it's so cool. So
I love
maybe
that
he,
idea.
He could have already sat through this meeting at another time, right? Like,
yep.
Yeah, and so maybe what he was experiencing during that meeting was he knew it was coming up and it was making him feel awkward, or maybe he was experiencing something else in the future and that's what made him leave. We're not really sure, but it's so interesting to think about.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. So chapter 112, For the Living, we have Morn's Vault, a city in the Sadeus Princedom, northwest of Hearthstone, near the Herdaz border. It is on the actual Alethkar map in part one of Oathbringer, so if you want to take a look. Gol is another squad leader in Amram's army in the past. This is someone we've just a random name. We have a little bit of a description here from Terra, slightly plump with a round face, firm build. Terra's beauty was a subtle thing. There is a suspiciously close description to someone already in Irithiru when Ishna is quizzing Gaz, Vath, Red, and Vale about the tavern occupants. Gaz spots a cute Thalen at the bar. She's not Thalen, but she's wearing a Thalen dress with deep violet blouse and a forest green skirt. I don't like the pairing, but she seems to be confident, used to playing with the attention of men, but I think she came here looking for someone because she's ignoring the soldiers and she keeps glancing over her shoulder. I'm not really sure why this was included here, but it sounds like maybe he's saying that maybe he thinks that potentially is in Urithiru and not still at Morn's Vault, which is very interesting. Or maybe they all just, you know, they're just two ladies who look the same, right? Shadesmar Forest. The jungle-style trees have given way to taller, more statuesque ones, with deep crimson trunks and limbs like burnt red crystals that, at the ends, burst into small collections of minerals. Which is neat. Exhaustion Spren, circle above the air like large chickens. anything that is bird-like is referred to as a chicken in Roshar, which is hilarious.
Right.
We get a little bit more context for that now, knowing that they, you know, that humans brought some stuff, livestock and whatnot from another world, right? Chapter 13, The Thing That Men Do Best. There's not a lot going on in this chapter, but we do have a little bit here on Shinovar, the region humans were given when they arrived on Roshar. It's mostly sheltered from high storms. The animals, plants they brought, horses, chickens, grass, and wheat, can thrive there because of the surrounding mountains. High storms don't hit as hard, so they can live a normal, non-Rosharian existence. Right. In that little pocket, which is nice. Dawn shards are ancient weapons used to destroy the Tranquiline Halls. Honor promised that the Surgebinders would do the same to Roshar. Dawn shards are not necessarily the honor blades. They are also not shard blades. These are something else altogether. And the novella we'll be covering after Oathbringer is called Dawn Shard. So
Dawn
just
Shard.
Wanted to throw that out there. The Recreants, it was not only the only... Excuse me. It was not only the truth of humankind's origin that caused the recreants, it was the distinct, powerful fear that they would destroy this world as men like them had destroyed the one before. So the Radiants abandoning right. their vows was, that was the reason, but it wasn't, you know, they were really afraid they were going to destroy this planet like their ancestors had destroyed the last one. So really, really interesting stuff here. Thank you so much to Buzzkill Joe.
It's so good.
For all the help with the info dump. We really appreciate all the work. All right, so that comes to the end of the episode.
That covers that.
Yeah, the next episode will be all three interludes in the same episode. It's like one small one like medium-sized one, and then another small one afterwards. So we'll have a nice little sandwiching of interludes here. So yeah, we'll Jack and I are off for a cottage weekend next weekend, so we're not recording, but we have some backup episodes, right. So we won't be not releasing anything right now. But we have lots of stuff to come. Like I said, only 9 more episodes till the end of this book. Get ready, bud. Ugh. Buckle up. 88 miles per hour. We're going to go for it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You excited or what?
Yeah, I'm excited. Sorry. And can I look at the titles of the interludes? Or
I think the titles are just the
names.
Or
should I wait?
You can... No, don't look at the titles. Just
okay.
wait. Yeah, just wait.
Okay.
If you want to be able to enjoy the live read like a bunch of people in the audience have enjoyed it today, you can go to patreon.com/heroesof and sign up for our Patreon. You'll get the Discord link and there's other fun things there you can take a look at. You get the early access and all that, which people are going to probably hopefully listen to today after they're done sitting in with us and listening to the live read. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, are we staying on, or are we...
We're going to do a little bit of a quick Q&A if we have time, maybe like a 10-minute Q&A with everybody that's online right now, and just to pop in and say hi. If you want to reach out to us for any reason, you can do so at heroesofacathra@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Instagram at the Storm Pod. There's also the subreddit and the Facebook page of Storm Pod. So please reach out. We love it when you do. All right, that's it.
We made it.
We did it,
Part
dude.
Four.
Yeah, and no one died. Adolin didn't have to die or anything.
And Adolin, yeah, I was completely off, which is great.
But that's totally fine. Yeah. We really appreciate that you guys listen, and we love you very much. Till next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Acathra.